the internet, and welcome to this special episode of the Daily Zeitgeist. My name is Jack O'Brien, and I am thrilled to be joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray.
Hi, you sound really thrilled.
I'm thrilled, as always, be joined by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray.
Okay.
Was that too much? Too much sarcastic energy?
That was very aggressive, Jack. Very aggressive.
And we are thrilled to be joined in our third seat by the hilarious Ify Wadiwe.
Hello, everybody. It's Ify Chukwudi Wadiwe here. Down with the Daily Zeitgeist. Very excited to be here today talking with Miles Gray. You know, it's going to be a good time. Jack O'Brien is chilling as well.
I like this new character.
Yeah. I was hoping that that would just go for the entire
hour. It might have to.
Yeah, this is how I'm doing this. Always like this.
But just without either of us speaking, if you just kept going
just
with that.
Keeps going. Yeah, that long.
Anyway, my day today, I was walking
So today we're giving out the Geisties for the movie that captured the zeitgeist.
Yes. And we are the authority on this.
And the TV show that captured the zeitgeist.
Yes.
And so we're gonna just run through a list and then kind of debate the merits of the films on our list. We will not be talking about Star Wars, The Last Jedi, because we have a separate episode coming up for y'all where we're gonna talk about Star Wars with a couple other special guests, and also because it's not one of the movies that captured the zeitgeist.
No, all it did was enrage a lot of neckbeards.
Right, exactly.
And some people, you know, I could argue was appropriate
to the year, but yeah, it's not appropriate enough, as you will soon see, because our list is lit. So let's start out with the movie It, which kind of came out of nowhere. You know, there was supposedly going to be a boycott of the movie It because Stephen King was talking spicy about Donald Trump. And so the MAGA army came out and were like, all right, guys, you know what to do. Nobody see It. And then it came out and was a monster hit.
Well, we've said time and again, the MAGA effect on films and TVs that are boycotted by that group of people.
Yeah.
It's actually the greatest endorsement.
Yeah. Apparently people seem to
100%
like to get behind it. But it does seem appropriate to the cultural moment.
Can you tell me why?
It seems like a movie where people are scared of a clown who is actually killing people, even though he looks sort of silly on the surface and comes from
sewer. You're describing the president.
Yes. Yeah.
Because we're living in fear of a terrifying old white clown.
Right.
Who is just doing a bunch of damage to a young generation.
Right.
And operating on people's fear.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
And yeah.
What, it happens only every 8 years, they said, in the movie?
Right.
Right.
Yeah, you know, last year we had a black clown that brought hope to the city.
That'd be this old.
It's like, I don't know, this is a weird turn, but okay.
All right. Horror just had a big year in general, as we'll get to. The big superhero movie of the year was undoubtedly Wonder Woman. It was kind of the superhero movie that was just, you know, an unqualified success, killed it at the box office. Critics seemed to like it. They actually let a woman direct it.
Yeah.
Real crazy. Out there
fucking
move.
Social justice warriors, man. I'm telling you.
The one DC movie directed by a woman was Wonder Woman, and it is the one DC movie that turns out is actually good.
Yeah. Go figure.
Yeah, how about it? So, and that seemed to capture the moment of female empowerment, or maybe it kind of presaged the whole Me Too movement a little bit, like women stepping up, saying, fuck this patriarchy a little bit, because it came out at the beginning of the summer, and Weinstein didn't get taken down until a couple months later.
Yeah.
But
literally the fall.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I think Wonder Woman was great. I think it was it was really nice to see a female superhero like have the same aggressive qualities. Like normally female superheroes in films are like reduced to like flying like psychics who didn't get their like hands like in shit.
Yeah.
And it was dope to just see one of them just wreck the shit out of like tanks and stuff. I really enjoyed that. Yeah, I think it's definitely up there because when you look, I think it was the second highest grossing film of this year behind Beauty of the Beast, Beauty and the Beast.
Right.
Which we don't have to talk about because I don't think that, I mean, I don't
know. Beauty and the Beast was the highest
Beauty
grossing?
Beauty and the Beast was the big one. And again, I guess even though we don't have it on our list, I guess you can make an argument for like a female protagonist being held captive by a like horrifying beastly male is actually fairly appropriate for where we ended the year, even though Beauty and the Beast came out at the beginning of the year.
Yeah.
So maybe that should be on our list, but it's not. And
that's for children.
Right. That's for children.
I mean, because when you also look, I mean, again, these aren't about what the like, highest grossing films are most critically acclaimed. We're just trying to be like, what felt like, you know, what?
The movie of the year.
Can
like,
sum
about,
up the year.
So, you know how Time Magazine has the person of the year, and sometimes, you know, Obama wins, but other times Hitler wins.
Yeah.
And it's not whether they're the best person. It's just they're the person that, like, summed up the year, that was most influential, that when there's a history book that, like, has a picture next to the year 2017, this is the face, and that's how what we're doing, trying to do with movies. Like, what is the movie that people will think of when they think of this year? And might as well go to the next one that I think is the odds-on consensus favorite is Get Out. I didn't want to start with it, even though we have it first on our list, just because that would have been too much. But yeah, Get Out came out of nowhere, was a genuine cultural phenomenon. Was politically incredibly relevant, you know, had a black writer, director, star, and, you know, was about the experience of being a black person in America in the modern world, and was just generally a really great movie. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Oh, it was hands down my favorite. I think just the steps to it also was amazing because we hear, you know, Jordan Peele is coming out with a horror movie. And I think a lot of people were like, what? This comedy dude's doing a horror movie? And then when you see what it was, you could have never guessed that he was going to do it and that he was going to stick the landing so well.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable.
And it was one of those things like through film, right? It helped people understand, like, even the subtle ways situations can be terrifying for people of color. And, like, really subtle, like, there are times, like, even as I was watching it, like, you forget that, like, there are versions of racism that aren't so necessarily aggressive, like, fuck you, you're black or whatever. Mm-hmm. Or, like, the subtle ways when people are like, oh, you're so cool, man.
That's
really cool, brother. Like, you know, like, oh, he's a cool, like, you know, that shit, like, when the dad was doing it, I was like,
yeah.
Like, I had a lot of moments like that, like, when, you know, meeting, like when I would date white girls, meeting their parents, they're like, yeah, you're a cool guy. Like there were very familiar things to it that I was like, I guess I had internalized or hadn't really thought about. And like, it was a great step for, I think, people even kind of seeing just the nuances of what can be terrifying.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
That, you know, I think we're a little bit obscured for people over the years. And I think that coupled with a lot of the events that happened this year, I think people just kind of, it seemed like they were waking up to at least understanding what the black experience is like in this country a little bit more. And I think that the film really did a good job of doing
that. Yeah, being admired in a way that is like fetishizing almost. Yes.
Right.
Like, yeah.
And it started a lot of cool conversation. I remember that there was an interview that the lead actress.
Allison Williams.
Brian Williams' daughter.
People would stop her in the street and be like, yeah, she was hypnotized, though. And then she'd be like, no, she was evil. And it was like, oh, no. But like her parents, you know, because people were so inclined to think this beautiful white woman has somehow been tricked into being evil. Like they want so bad to be like, no, she's a beautiful white woman. There's no way she can be evil. And I think that's a perfect analogy for these people like Tommy Lauren and stuff that get to go so far and say so many heinous things. I honestly believe that if Tommy Lauren was saying the things that she was and she was a man, she'd be like, shun. You know, I feel like you can only have one Bill O'Reilly, Alex Jones. That's, you know,
right.
Then you're too crazy. Like, I feel like she doesn't get the same heat as someone like Milo, who's just like, yo, this dude's gross. And I feel like it's because, like, she's this beautiful white woman. So people are, like, willing to be like, calm down. You're tripping right now. You know?
She's virtuous.
Yeah, it's like this weird type of sexism where it's like, well, you're a woman. There's no way you can be evil.
Say this vitriol
and manipulative.
Shit.
And just in terms of cultural impact, it was the 14th most successful movie of the year, which put it ahead of Pirates of the Caribbean, Kong Skull Island, Coco, Cars 3, War for the Planet of the Apes. So, you know, it beat out a lot of blockbusters with a budget of $4.5 million. And then Metacritic does this great thing. I'm such a Metacritic stan, which is the lamest thing to be in the world. But I do.
Almost every day this week, there's been a Metacritic mention.
Yeah, I know. Well, you know, it's just such a far superior product to Rotten Tomatoes. And people still, like, when they talk about review aggregators, they go directly to Rotten Tomatoes, which sucks. But so Metacritic does this thing where they, like, collate all of the top 10 movie lists of the year. And they give 3 points for being the critic's first place movie, 2 points for being second place, 1 point for being ranked third through 10th, and then 0.5 for being included on an unranked list with 11 to 20 titles. And, you know, they go through all of the critics' lists. The number 5 movie is Dunkirk, 4 is The Florida Project, 3 Call Me By Your Name, 2 Lady Bird, and 1 is Get Out. So, Get Out is, you know, despite being a cheap genre movie, really just kind of captured the moment, captured the year. So moving on, The Big Sick was a really solid comedy from over the summer that talked about race, and I don't know, just had some great performances, really good jokes. What'd you guys think?
I didn't see it.
Cool. Girls Trip.
Anna, did you see it?
Anna says something. It's good.
It's a great movie that depicts an interracial relationship and the troubles a young brown man has to deal with trying to bring a white woman into his life when his family does not approve.
We already talked about Get Out.
in an arranged marriage, and it's very well done, and it's very funny, and Kumail is hilarious, and... you guys are terrible for not seeing it.
I saw it.
You saw it. I'm terrible.
I thought, yeah.
Direct that at me, Anna.
A real high percentage of the jokes land.
But for in terms of like cultural phenomena, why do you feel it gets a mention here?
Because it kind of came out of nowhere. It was like, but it was all everybody was talking about, at least, you know, in certain circles for a couple weeks. I don't think it totally took over the entire zeitgeist. I think it was real popular in like comedy circles and, you know, LA, New York scene, but I don't know that it was, you know, the culture defining moment that Get Out and Wonder Woman was.
Oh, so it was big in the coastal liberal elite bubble.
Right.
I see.
Next movie is a comedy that I think like basically all the jokes fucking land. Girls Trip, I thought was fucking great.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, a pretty big hit that kind of came out of nowhere. And yeah, I don't know. It just worked really well. It launched some new names and, you know, showed us some oldies but goodies.
I didn't see it.
The theme continues.
But I will talk about the zeitgeist effect in which how it skyrocketed Tiffany Haddish into the stratosphere. Like, people finally were like, oh, this person's funny. It's like,
she's been funny.
It's crazy. I remember, this is a fun story. I remember when we first had Tiffany Haddish on At Midnight and just seeing, like, Chris and the showrunner come in the next day and go, she's going to be a star because she just lit the show up in a way that you just never seen before. She kind of, like, commanded and dominated the room. And, you know, it's real cool when you get to see like that light bulb turn up that happened for other people like Marcella Argueo when she was on the show. Like, people were like, oh man, Like, this is crazy. So, like, you know, I feel like you hear about that a lot, like in like stories, documentaries, yeah. and podcasts. It was crazy to watch it, be in the room firsthand. It was like, oh, yeah.
And that was before Girls Trip came out.
Yeah, it was before. Yeah.
So if you were a writer on At Midnight, which was a Comedy Central show for many years.
Yes,
and would
in
have,
memorial. In memoriam this year.
Right. R.I.P., R.I.P.
And it would have three comedians come on and like compete to have the funniest answers. It was hosted by a guy named Chris Hardwick, I think.
Nailed it.
Yeah.
but that, so he was like, damn, she's a genius. If you want, one of the next movies we had on the list was I, Tanya.
Yeah.
As one of the geisties.
Because, yeah, I wanted to throw in a movie that not only I think is great, but was really representative of the year we've had. And what's crazy about I, Tanya is, like, you watch it, and it's based off the autobiography she wrote. And one of the things I didn't know is that she didn't actually break Nancy Kerrigan's knee.
Like, right,
it was
right,
her
right.
abusive husband and his goons that went and did it and threw her under the bus. And it's that story of this. And it's crazy to watch it because at the end, it kind of tells what she's up to now. And like I think it's like she's teaching some local class and she's living like a kind of humble life. And it's interesting to kind of like watch someone get done wrong, see like someone go through something and then they get no retribution. And I feel like that's been this year where we've been like, all the proof has been shown. We know all the transgressions. We know all the laws of Constitution that the president has broke. Everyone in his camp has broke. There's been talks of impeachment. And as a matter of fact, I remember getting an email saying that they promised that there will be an impeachment vote by Christmas. Christmas is next week, and it has yet to happen.
Not going
to
happen.
Yeah, so it feels like the end of I, Tanya, where it's like, yeah, we know who did the wrong, who deserves the retribution, but we're all going to be teaching a kayaking class next year in Wisconsin.
And, shout out to Tanya Harding, because I see her on VH1 from time to time,
yeah.
like those panel shows where she's just like weighing in here like, oh, Tanya, there you are.
Yeah.
Well, you know. It is what it is.
It is.
It's the world we live in.
What it is.
So I guess in terms of films, for the ones that we have seen on the list,
right?
Again, what captured the spirit? Are we going to say, do we need a drum roll? Or we're just going to say, it was Get Out.
It was Get Out.
It was Get Out. Also, check out the alternate ending.
Oh,
the
yeah,
DVD.
I saw the alternate
right.
ending.
Whoa.
I was so
Could you imagine if that was the ending?
Yeah, I was like,
broke me.
Yeah, it's like, I couldn't.
But the alternate ending arguably sums up the year a little bit better than the happy ending.
Because it would have blown
right.
your
Spoiler
face.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, I don't even want to spoil it. If you can rent the DVD, just check out that alternate. Like, watch the movie and then watch the alternate. Like, don't even just watch the alternate ending, because I watched it, like, straight after. And I was like, man, if the movie ended like this, I probably would have, like, just died inside.
Yeah. But anyway. The award for best explanation of how a movie sums up the year goes to Iffy and I, Tanya, because that convinced me that I, Tanya was the movie of the year, even though I don't think that many people saw it. But
yeah.
Great explanation, Iffy. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to talk about TV shows.
Ooh.
And we're back.
Yes.
So big year in TV, streaming, and the show that we start off with kind of had a big year at the Emmys. I think it was the first streaming specific show that won for like best TV show, Handmaid's Tale, cleaned up at the Emmys. Yeah. Did you guys watch it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was pretty good. Pretty dark.
Definitely some. Yeah. If it gave you a glimpse into a possible dystopian future.
It felt very much like of the moment. Like,
it was absurd.
To the point that it was crazy that they had made it before they knew the outcome of the election. But I think everybody had a like extra sort of dimension of poignancy and like horror while watching it because of the events that were taking place.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
In the real world. Next, we have Rick and Morty, which definitely had a cultural moment.
Oh, yeah.
They added more diversity to their writer's room, had probably their best season yet. Some of the best episodes in the history of Rick and Morty, many of them written by women. And it also summed up the year because its fan base of partially made up of neckbeards kind of freaked out about the fact that, you know, women were being added to the writer's room and how, like, people weren't smart enough to be its fans and how McDonald's didn't bring back enough Szechuan sauce or some shit.
Yeah.
I don't know. There was, like, a near riot at a McDonald's, I think, at some point. Or that might have been a overly sensationalized news story.
Right.
But anyways, Rick and Morty was everywhere. Definitely one of my favorite TV shows of the year. What do you guys think?
I watched it sporadically early, but yeah. I can't say I'm a Rick and Morty fan. Although
right.
I don't think I could say I watch enough to say either way to have a huge opinion on it. But yeah, I feel like in terms of culture, it got a lot of people talking, like, through different events, especially the Szechuan sauce thing. Like, it had a lot of people being like, what the fuck is Rick and Morty? And
yeah.
who are these people who are, like, rioting in the parking lot?
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, I love Rick and Morty. It was probably one of my favorite shows, but it's another nerdy thing I like that I have to distance myself from the fans. And this time it's like, fans of Rick and Morty are like fans of Immortal Technique. They think by watching the show, they're smarter. They think that it,
right.
like, it makes them smart for partaking in this because someone is saying these faux smart things and you're like, oh man, or these deep things. And it's one of those weird things. Everyone who thinks they're a Rick are the same as that person who, like, brags about being, like, the Larry David from Curb. It's like, you know that person's a piece of shit. Like, that's the joke, is that someone can be this shitty.
Right, right.
And the real heroes of the show are the people that have to deal with that person and how they deal with it.
Right.
It reminded me of, like, back when, before you guys were born, when The Matrix first came out, people, yeah, were like, no, but you don't get it, man. Like, what if it was all just, like, an illusion. I was like, yeah, no shit. Like, that's what the movie was.
Yeah.
And that's a thought other people have had, guys.
I still, I don't watch movies that came out before I was born, so I have not seen The Matrix.
Well, you don't
sounds
remember.
Like, sounds awful.
I remember The Matrix. I was deep in The Matrix because The Matrix had that PlayStation game where you played as two, you had a male or female protagonist, and there was the scene where, I think, was it Jada Pinkett or Halle Berry who was in the sequel?
Jada
would kiss the character, and the big thing was, like, if you pick the girl character, she kisses the girl, because it was like a cutscene.
Right,
it wasn't
right.
like digital. And like, that was like the biggest thing to us, like, nerds, was like, oh, you gotta pick the girl.
I
so
too.
You can see two girls kiss.
I remember this game. I don't know the movie, but I remember the game, because I used to use my Game Shark to have unlimited bullet time when I play, and I would just wreck the shit out of every level because I was basically cheating.
Yeah,
I was,
no, you were cheating.
I
not
played,
basically.
Yeah,
you were cheating.
Okay, sure. I like to call it a game enhancer, like they market it. But anyway, shout out to Game Shark, wherever you're at. Because I remember, yeah, like if you had Bullet Time Infinite, yeah. you just basically played the whole game in slow motion and killed everybody. Anyway, let's move on to the next show.
Game of Thrones.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if it sums up the year.
Yeah.
But it definitely, it just consumes so much of people's attention that I guess it just by default, it has to be on this list.
Yeah.
Somewhat disappointing, sort of like this year.
Yeah. I guess, yeah, it was.
Yeah, there were some rough episodes in there. The ending was tough.
Spoiler alert. Look, when they were dragging the dragon straight up out of the lake, how come there wasn't any tension on that chain? But anyway.
Yeah.
There's like shit like
and
that.
Also,
but anyway.
Where the fuck did the White Walkers get that chain from?
Yo, the White Walker Depot.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, I don't know. It was definitely my least favorite season of Game of Thrones to date.
I mean, I just like that shit was finally starting to happen.
Yeah.
Because I have been waiting for all
like
this shit.
It was all happening too fast, which, again, a good representation of this year.
Right.
Like, shit was just constantly happening, like big things. Like, they spent a whole season, like, walking to a place. And
right.
then, like, this season, it was just like, okay, and
we're
now
there.
We're going to,
yep.
like, run back to the wall and, like, get the army to, like, come back and, like, fly a fucking dragon. Like, that happened in the space of, like, 5 minutes in the show. It was like, yo, this used to take, like, 3 seasons to do that much shit. But...
Well, have you seen George R.R. Martin? Like, have you seen how he looks?
Yeah.
Yeah, HBO's trying to make sure they get this done before anything happens to George.
Well, yeah, there were some cultural parallels. Like, weren't there, like, those rumored, like, Antifa posters that were, like, likening it to, like, fighting the White Walkers and shit?
Come fight the whites?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, I mean,
I don't know, man.
We don't need a full-on race war,
The more we talk about this, the more my least favorite season of Game of Thrones yet might be the show of the year, just based on all the ways it lines up.
Because fighting the brain dead whites.
Yeah. And just looking at like this year, the fact that things that seemed like they would be huge news stories in years past would just like go under the radar because five other fucking things were happening.
Oh,
like,
interesting. Whoa. Never thought. Okay. Yeah. Maybe we'll have to rise it up a little bit on the list.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Up next, Big Little Lies.
Yep.
Great show about women fucking up an abusive man. Dope. Summed up the zeitgeist, I think, pretty accurately. Did you guys watch it?
Yeah, I loved it.
No, my wife did, though. She really enjoyed it.
Man, the show was so well edited, too. Like, that was one of the shows I watched, and I was even, like, aside from the performances and the directing and the music, the editing really, like, it made the flashbacks more powerful and poignant, and I thought it was a fucking great, great show. And, you know, shout outs to Zoe Kravitz, too.
Yeah.
Who apparently was, like, playing way older than she actually was. I was kind of surprised. I'm like, y'all know she's really young.
Yeah, let's talk about Zoe. When I went to 808s and Heartbreaks at the Hollywood Bowl, she played a golden woman for the show where she would just stand in the back during Paranoid, I believe.
Really?
Yeah.
She was just covered in gold?
She was like covered in gold and standing, and she was like the sun shining on Kanye. It was beautiful.
See, that's just how I picture her spending her like off time.
Yeah.
Just covered in gold, just like being just amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, and the show, I think, again, it was, for me as a man, it was a way to talk about like domestic abuse and things like that in a way that was very moving, and it wasn't just sort of like, you know, the typical portrayals in TV shows of like an abused husband's like, he smacks a woman and yells, and like that's sort of it. It like sort of ends with the sort of physical altercation and not really talking about the mental trauma or the other dimensions of it.
Right.
And I think that
like
was
an excitement to it.
Yeah.
And like all that stuff.
Yeah. That they just sort of, it painted it in such a way that I think, you know, was very moving. So I think, again, just as a feat of TV making, very, very good.
Yeah. And then we're going to go through the last three quickly because we're kind of running out of time. Stranger Things 2, you know, it definitely captured the zeitgeist when it came out. Like, it was a big deal. It was sort of like, I'd say, comparing it to our music episode, it was like sort of the way Mask Off was like the only thing you heard for a couple months. Like, this was like the show everyone was talking about for a couple months. But I don't know. Can you think of ways that it like captured the year overall?
Not necessarily, other than those poor kids having to deal with like their new celebrity status and having like weird adults wait out for them and yell at them for not wanting to stop and talk to them.
Right.
It's like, you're a grown ass dude.
Oh, you mean like outside of the show rather than like the content of the show itself? Yeah. Also, I thought like, how did Millie Bobby Brown like age like 19 years quick? In between seasons, like she looks so different.
Yeah.
It's just funny to watch these kids like grow up very quickly because they're at that age too where like your face is not the same 6 months from now or whatever. But I guess in terms of capturing the zeitgeist, I mean, sometimes I feel like we're living in the fucking upside down.
Right.
Yeah.
And I feel like we're all aging like presidents, like we're all aging too fast because of how stressful the world is. We're aging like presidents and he's aging like a normal person.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. He doesn't feel stressful. Like he's dealing with any stress. He's just like, okay.
She's like, do you believe how much McDonald's they let me eat? and then last two, Riverdale and The Crown. I never saw Riverdale. Those kids seem to like it, though.
Them kids seem to like it. I've seen a few episodes. I didn't realize it was based off Archie.
When
I started hearing them call each other characters' names, and I saw my girlfriend, I'm like, wait, what is this fucking Archie and Josie and the Pussycats? Or
Jughead.
Show? Yeah.
Jughead, Zack and Cody.
I was very popular. Did it capture the zeitgeist? Bringing retro shit back to the future? Maybe. Nah. Not for me.
All right. So I'm going to do a drum roll, and then on three, we're all going to say what we think our show of the year was. Ready? Okay. 1, 2. Three,
Big Little Lies.
Whoa.
Wow. Right. The council has spoken.
Has it. But Rick and Morty comes in second, and Anna looks confused.
Anna, did you like Big Little Lies?
Yes.
All right.
All right. That was not me doing an impression either.
All right, that's going to do it for our Geisty for Movie and TV Show of the Year. Iffy, where can people follow you?
Yeah, you can catch your boy at Iffywadiwe, IFYNWADIWE on Twitter and Instagram, and IfDeez, IFDEEZ on the Twitch. Let's get it in.
Miles, where can people follow you?
You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Miles of Gray. And again, guys, this is just our thoughts on it. So don't come for me. This is vacation time.
This is an invitation for you guys to share your thoughts, but don't share them as in, you fucking idiots, wrong with you?
Because I don't have time. I'm already trying to install these Christmas gifts I got, the one thing that I got.
Install these Christmas gifts?
It was a light fixture. So it was one I wanted, though.
Cool.
Don't worry about that. Anyway, worry about your own presence. And, you know, enjoy your break, too.
All right. You can follow me at Jack_O'Brien. You can follow us at Daily Zeitgeist on Twitter, at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page. And you can go to our webpage, dailyzeitgeist.com, to find our episodes and our footnotes.
Footnotes.
And please check out Culture Kings. Go into your podcast app, search Culture Kings, spelled the way those words are spelled. It is coming out on January 10th. It is our new and first podcast on the West Coast, How Stuff Works Comedy Network. It stars Carl Tart, Edgar Montplaisir, Jack Keith Neal, and it is lit. It's really good. They talk.
You heard it,
pop
kids.
Culture. You heard it. It's lit and fidget spinning. So check it out. And that's going to do it for today's episode. We will be back with another special holiday episode tomorrow. Talk to you then.